everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Tom, get ready. Short sleeve t-shirt on. I am ready for one of the earliest 90 degree days. We normally don't get into the 90s.
I suspected something when I saw you shuffling in with those Bermuda shorts and those flip-flops.
Not yet. Doing the shorts, just the jeans and the t-shirt. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, March 25th, 2022. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. The call letters, KVOI, The Voice. We are in our 12th year now with the radio project, with the radio show, 34th year on TV and radio here in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our media partners. We like to say on Friday, if I could, I would say 24/7, thank you, to TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thank you. Dylan Smith over there, Dan Shear at the Green Valley News, Saharita Sun have been great supporters, Jim Ninsel at the Tucson Weekly, and the Tucson Local Media Group, which includes Inside Tucson Business, The Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, we welcome back to the program. It's hard to believe, over 3 months since Pima County Attorney Laura Conover joined us. Laura was elected in November of 2019, replacing Barbara LaWall. Barbara served about a quarter of a century as Pima County's top legal officer. Hey, Laura, how are you?
Bill, I'm wonderful, and it's always lovely to be back. And I can't believe it's been 3 months. Time flies.
I know. Didn't that 90 degree creep up on you today?
It did.
Yeah,
it did.
It's very warm out there. Tim Steller is here. We always like to welcome Tim. And actually, Tim arrived 4 minutes early, which is really great to see. Tim is the 2019 Arizona Plus Press Club Columnist of the Year and the current Arizona Newspaper Association Journalist of the Year. Tim, how is your day going so far?
It's going well so far. I managed to get up early, get out early, and walk Broadway from Country Club to Euclid to get a start on my reporting for Sunday's column.
They're 6 months behind. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
A few months, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure the merchants over there.
The ones who are left are in it for the duration.
They're not going to pack up and leave just because it's a few months tardy. All right, Laura Conover, staffing situation in the Pima County Attorney's Office. How would you characterize it? Have things stabilized?
Yes, they have, and that's really been a dream come true. I know we've talked before that I really put myself way out there with the county in saying that if we could raise salaries agency-wide for the first time since 1997, that we could retain people at a better rate, and that we could welcome people back to the office. And that's exactly what's happening. We've had a number of returning veterans to help right where we need the help, with special victims, with in the homicide group called Major Crimes. And we are delighted to have returning veteran attorneys from the Attorney General's office, from Pinal County, from Maricopa County, and from private law firms. It's certainly been a welcome homecoming. Our civil law firm, as well, as now officially, as of just last week, I think, completely fully staffed. We can't accept any applicants over there.
People are coming back?
Yes, yes. It's just wonderful. You know, they've been gone, some of them, many years, and it's wonderful to have them come back and to say, we want to be part of this mission. We want to be part of the new way forward for public health and public safety in Pima County.
The increasing crime rate, specifically homicides, that has taxed the office, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's taxed the whole community. Mm-hmm. We are still tackling the backlog that we inherited when we came in, and the ever present and pressing cases that come in constantly. And so we are still officially doing homicide panel every single Monday. It means that all morning we review reports from three or four cases, and then in the afternoon we have presentations on three or four cases to see what cases can be resolved and what cases must go to trial or need go to trial.
Every Monday?
Every single Monday. It's unbelievably hard. So we've also doubled down on employee wellness and making sure we're taking good care of our people, because it's a heavy burden.
People never know about the backstory with all of this. I didn't know y'all got together every Monday just to talk about homicides.
Yes. Whoa. And that is something my predecessor did, was to form a homicide panel, and that's a best practice, Bill. You don't want individual prosecutors making a final determination on a homicide. It's such a lifelong consequential decision, and so you want all your veterans and your bureau chiefs and your supervisors to sit down at the table. Law enforcement who's been involved in the particular cases, the case detectives are there for a full formal presentation on every single homicide.
Let's bring in our friend Tim Steller. Tim?
Yeah, earlier this week, I think, or last week, there was a few protesters outside your office calling for a resolution to the case involving Tucson police officer, I believe it's Ryan Remington, who shot and killed a man named Richard Richards outside Lowe's. I think that occurred in December.
The wheelchair?
That
incident?
Was the man who was okay. In the electric scooter, yeah.
All right, yeah.
So what's the status of that, and why haven't you made a decision yet about charges or no charges against Officer Remington?
We have had protesters out in front of the building, and I want to make clear that they have been so peaceful, gracious, professional in exercising their First Amendment rights, and we welcome it and we encourage it, and we understand the frustration. As you know, Tim, I don't comment on pending investigations or cases, because I hold hallowed the rule that I not sway improperly a future jury, but I have said publicly that we continue to investigate. We have one out of state expert, and then two in the Maricopa County areas, and you don't rush them, and you don't rush the decision. You make the right decision, not a rushed decision.
So the other case that's somewhat similar, although it doesn't involve a killing, was that of Officer Robert Shalevsky. I wrote about him. He is the officer who took down two women, a mother and daughter, in the Culinary Dropout parking lot. That occurred back in October. I think it was December when your office agreed to review the decision not to charge. In any case, it's been at some point your office agreed to review not charging. And I'd ask the same about that. What's the situation there?
So, yeah, to clarify, the case went to the city prosecutor's office, and then there was a request, I think in December, from the city attorney's office for us to look at it, which was the first time we had received word about it. And then we didn't receive all the evidence that we have now until sometime quite after that. I cannot comment on pending investigations or cases, but I can comment, I think, on your record, Tim, which I really, really appreciated, was that you took the time to go back and publish a second story, saying that at the time of your first story, you didn't have all the reports and you didn't have the video footage. Because that really highlights making sure you do have as much as you can, and making a right determination and not a rush determination. We're trying so hard to not make gut decisions and emotional decisions. I mean, that's what drove and created the entire criminal justice system in America, was was tough on crime, war on drugs, that it's all emotional, and what we need to do instead is be fact and data driven, and we're working hard on that.
The population of the United States, when you look at the number of people incarcerated, I think our population, you know, 5% of the world's population is here, yet Laura Conover, 25% of the world's population, when you break it down to who's incarcerated, are people from the United States.
Right, right.
We put a lot of people behind bars in this country.
We do. And what's more, Bill, is that when you add people who are on some type of supervision, and you add that about how many people are being surveilled by the criminal justice system, the numbers are staggering. And what you have to believe then is that Americans are far more evil or violent than anyone else. Or you have to believe that Arizonans out of the United States are far more evil and violent than the rest of the United States. And of course, it's not true. It's mass incarceration, and a lot of it's driven by the private prisons. You know, if you build prisons, you're driven by profit to fill the beds, and that's the war on drugs. And
the incentive is to put people in beds.
Precisely. And when treatment, and when ankle monitoring and GPS and all of the rest is a fraction of the cost, it's what drains our public health system. It's what drains our public education system. And it's going to take a long time to steer this ship, this mighty, mighty ship. Each degree that we turn it in the county attorney's office is a triumph. It's painfully slow, but it's the way forward.
On that subject, Bill Montgomery was a county attorney in Maricopa County, maybe pretty opposite you in terms of his inclinations. One thing that he always maintained, and he personally helped block various criminal justice reform efforts over the years, was that putting people in prison, you know, it might sound bad. You might say it's wrong to have such a large proportion of our people in prison, but they do not commit crimes against other people when they are in prison. And therefore, and he attributed reduced crime rates to essentially increased incarceration. I assume that's something you know all about, but could you just tell us what the counter argument is to that, or is he right to some extent?
I think the counter argument is strong because, again, you want to be data driven on that. So in other words, if you extrapolate his concept and you say, well, for the term that they are incarcerated, they cannot commit a crime out in the public during that time, you, in order to actually get the full picture, then you have to then study recidivism rates, about what you get on the back end when you put, and so what you have to look at is putting low-level nonviolent people in prison because they have a substance use disorder, frankly because they're poor, because they have mental health illness, and then you put them in prison around actual professional criminals, you're really just building the future criminal syndicates. And then people start cycling in and out and in and out, and you haven't addressed the root cause. And so you've just created criminality for a lifetime in so many instances. So it's I would argue that vision is very short-sighted. And you have to play the long game, which is much, much, much harder.
By the way, Bill Montgomery now on the Arizona Supreme Court, just for what it's worth.
That's okay. Right. That's right. This would be a good time to bring up back in December, your office would announce it would no longer charge people for simple drug possession, paraphernalia, or related personal use cases. Recently, the memo came out to law enforcement from your office that there's a reversal of that policy.
That's precisely right, Bill. From the beginning, we promised that our policies would be data-driven and solution-oriented. And this is a complicated matter, of course, but We go back to October and my office does a huge 3-day deep data dive and moves to literally write motions to move as many people as we can out of the jail because it had hit all the way up to, swelled all the way up to 1,800, which was far too crowded. And Omicron was starting to present itself. So we were able to pull it down to 1,600 and then we couldn't budge after that. And so by December, with Omicron raging, with a lot of COVID inside the jail, I sent out that letter and said, we're gonna go back to a Lawal policy at the beginning of COVID, and we're not going to charge simple drug possession or paraphernalia. Please don't bring them to the jail. The sheriff joined me in that request. He implored his colleagues, don't book them, long form them. Just don't bring them to the jail. Let's also remember what we were just talking about with the homicide spike. The sheriff's problem, as he has articulated well, is that his jail is full right now of people who are being held on unspeakably violent crimes. So all the more reason why you don't want highly vulnerable, low-level, ill people in the jail along with them. As much as you try to separate them. So I put out the letter in December. On the date I put out the letter, the jail population was 1,671. And we continued to follow it on a daily basis. We couldn't budget. We did budge that number. We didn't see it come down at all. And by the time I lifted it, it was 1,673. So we didn't make any headway on the jail population. And we weren't sparing people from exposure to COVID. In fact, what was happening was that our brand new Steps Court, which is the nation's first pre-charge drug court, wasn't getting the people enrolled. Mm-hmm. So these individuals would be booked. They would sit in the pit of the jail, which is where you are stuck before your initial appearance. Eventually, my deputy would get the chances to dismiss your case after you've been presumably exposed to God knows what and crammed in the pit. And what we're doing now is we're enrolling them in the Steps Court again and straight into treatment. So there it is. It's got to be data driven. We have to say one more thing. What happened also during that time period of no charging, another historic spike in overdose deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So excruciating decisions that we yes. have to make.
And wait, are you saying that there's no connection between that other than, right? Do you think there's a connection? We can't say,
mm-hmm. but did it affect my decision to start enrolling people back in treatment again instead of dismissing? Yes. Absolutely. The overdose stat weighs heavily on all of us.
All right,
absolutely.
Tim, hold your thought there because we're overdue to talk about my favorite bakery in town. And talking about decisions, one of my big decisions when I go to Mona's, Tim, is what to select from the case. And I now have a new favorite. I'm doing now the bear claw and actually Ooh. Had one this morning from Mona's, and it's such a generously cut portion that you can easily slice it in half and have it for a couple of breakfasts. Your thoughts, Tim Stoller?
Well, it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds excellent.
And what would you pick right now if you had
to? I always go with the Kringle.
You would go with the Danish
yeah.
Kringle. After all, Mona's Danish Kringle, that's kind of their signature at Mona's Danish Bakery. Open right now for lunch, corner of Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. Open for breakfast, 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Sunday. And you won't regret it, a visit to Mona's. Find out what all the excitement is about. People are actually now waiting in line at 6:30 for Steve, the owner, to open the doors so they can get in there and grab their pastries and their coffee. We'll be back with Laura Conover. And I forgot to ask Laura, if you What would you go for right now? I know you're pretty stressed out. You're very busy. But if you were up at the what would you say to Steve and the team at Mona's? What would taste good to you right now?
You managed to influence me every time because last time you mentioned something chocolate.
Yeah. I talked about a chocolate croissant.
Right, right.
And have I now influenced you for perhaps a bear claw?
I'm dreaming of a bear claw
with that
right now.
Filled with that luscious almond paste.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, let's take a break right here. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Laura Conover is with us, Pima County Attorney, and Tim Steller is here from the Arizona Daily Star. Let's go to caller Matt. Matt, what's on your mind for Laura?
Yeah, Laura, last time I think I got a chance to ask you about homelessness, and specifically I know you were addressing things like how you deal with low-level issues involving mental and addictions. Right now, Tucson is undergoing apparently some sort of surge with homelessness. I think it's something that has, you know, obviously COVID related, but also seasonal, but also just, you know, the things that we discussed with homelessness, you know, with people being able to stay in their apartments. just generally speaking, are you working with the sheriff and with the Tucson Police Department? How are you addressing the issue of these homeless camps with regards to removing them? And would you be more inclined to see the city? It takes sometimes too long to create a housing first situation. Is there a possibility that we should encourage the city to consider a property that allows a camp to occur?
Matt, I do remember talking with you last time about this. I would say that the most direct way that my agency is necessarily going to be involved, three quick things come to mind. We talked about that Steps Court, right? So just moments ago, we were talking about whether a person gets their simple drug possession case dismissed and then they walk out, you know, to the front property of the jail at 3 o'clock in the morning alone and with no resources at all. Steps Court is a holistic court. So when they have their first hearing, it's not just drug treatment. There is housing there's access, making sure people are enrolled in access. Behavioral health is there. It goes on and on. It's an extraordinary court system. The second thing are our partnerships with our diversion programs. You know, we were just at the groundbreaking a week ago for IMU 360, which are the mini homes that are particularly targeting kids who are aging out of foster care. That's another extremely vulnerable population and moment in time for these people. And then, you know, of course, our community involvement. You know, Patrick Robles is here in the studio with me today. He's our community outreach coordinator, and he gets us out almost every Saturday into the neighborhoods and doing cleanups and making sure we have these partnerships and are working to keep our neighborhoods as healthy and clean as possible during what is obviously quite the surge.
Is the STEPS an acronym for something?
Yes.
It is.
We have acronyms for
everything. For everything, right?
I think supportive treatment are
okay.
Some of the S's and T's.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's plenty. All right. Back to you, Tim.
Previously, I think last year sometime, you started a sort of campaign of announcing the possibility of expungement of, I think it's strictly marijuana convictions. Is that right?
Yeah. It's Arizona's first opportunity expungement came from Prop 207, and it's only simple marijuana. Right?
Simple marijuana. Okay.
Possession, yeah.
So, and then recently there was some protest of your pursuing expungement in the case of, I believe his name is Jared Barnes, who was the driver who struck and killed Ann Day, however many years ago that was, maybe 10, 15 years ago. Tell us about that. You are pursuing that, or you did pursue that, your office, that is?
So, Tim, interestingly, this is an opportunity where I can expand a little bit more because this is the post-conviction territory, so there is no jury that I would be swaying, and I am liberated to speak a little bit more. That is a heartbreaking situation, and we were talking earlier about focusing on the law and the facts and not emotion. This is very, very hard for a family who lost a loved one. And years later, the young man appears to be looking to expunge the simple marijuana possession attached to that terrible tragedy and that terrible case. When we looked at it, having avowed that we would move to expunge, the question was, is there a legal obstacle to that? And the answer was no. So in other words, if he's entitled, as we believe he will be, perhaps we'll be persuaded otherwise, no one's come up with any legal argument whatsoever that he's not entitled. If we didn't go forward with the expungement, then it would mean we were engaging in an emotional reaction, which we do have for the family, and engaging in kind of special treatment. If we've avowed to do it, then you do it, no matter how seriously you feel for a grieving family.
Digging a little deeper into that, the He had a manslaughter conviction or an endangerment conviction, something like that, for the collision along with the marijuana, right?
Correct. And so to be very, very clear, the rest of the case is untouched. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just the simple marijuana possession. So in other words, the homicide-related conviction stands. He served prison time for it. It stands and it's untouched. So that there's no legal... there's no legal reason, it appears, to deny him what he's entitled to.
And for those that don't know, and a former Pima County supervisor. So just to clarify that incident, I think you're right, Tim. I think it may be like maybe 10 years ago.
Well, and the whole community still grieves for such a profound loss. And you can't overstate that. At the same time, if a person is now back out living in our community or living in any community, you want them to rehabilitate and to succeed. That's the whole point. You don't want people to repeat prior actions. You want them to move on in a healthy way.
Tim, I've only got about 4 minutes. Is there something else you'd like to address?
Well, just to clarify that collision occurred in May 2016. If I'm not mistaken, it was up on Sunrise.
What? It was 2016?
Yeah, I thought it was further back.
See, that's what happens with the two COVID years.
Yeah.
Everything seemed like, oh,
like
my gosh,
decade.
That was a decade ago. So again, that was 2016.
Yeah.
Up on Sunrise, right?
Yep. Now, if you one thing I wanted to check back with you on, I'm sorry you might have dealt with this on a previous show, but I haven't had a chance to ask you about this. So in October, November, somewhere in there, your original chief of staff left the office, and Tamara Malembo, I think was her name. And that was a surprise to me, at least, because it was early in your term. And the thing that I learned later was that there was like an NDA or something like that, non-disclosure agreement, non-disparagement type agreement when she left, and then she had through the end of the year in pay, something like that. I don't have the documents in front of me. I have them somewhere here on my computer. So what was that about? Why would there be an agreement for someone to leave and still get paid and that sort of thing?
Well, so it sounds like a number of those facts are off. So it's always good to clarify. For me, I can't say it was a huge surprise. We should clarify, it was the chief deputy position.
Okay, so he's second in command.
Right. Yeah. I had to recruit her very aggressively. She was extremely talented out of the federal system. And she had to make tremendous sacrifices to join me on this journey. And it was a very, very difficult year in a first new administration coming in from outside the office for the first time since 1972 during a homicide spike during a pandemic. And she did a fantastic job. She gave us a full year. And I was sad, but I couldn't be surprised that she got poached and got recruited. I mean, she's just she's a talent. And yes, attorneys, of course, always go out with letters that clarify that nothing wrong was afoot, and that we parted on good terms and with our gratitude for her service.
This whole victim services division, something you feel very closely, you feel strongly about, and you've been meeting mm-hmm. with victims. I think this week you had to meet with some victims. That must be really hard.
Well, that unit is extraordinary. Again, with a nod to my predecessor, rightfully, that victim services unit, I call it the crown jewel. They are extraordinary. These advocates work day and night. They have built an army of volunteers across the entire county. They respond to crime scenes in the middle of the night to have services available for people right at the scene of crimes. What I have done, Bill, that I think has been a departure is I have said that if you have lost a loved one in this community in a criminal act, you are absolutely entitled to sit down with me face to face if you want to. And they take me up on that offer routinely. And I always have a highly experienced victim advocate with me. I think that kind of access is critical. And it is tough, but that's what I'm here for.
But your door is open to these people.
That's right. That's
all
absolutely right.
Laura Conover, Pima County Attorney. Thank you, Laura. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, Bill. Thank you, Tim, for your thoughtful questions.
Tim Steller, stick around. Tim, I've got a few things for you. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. We kept Laura a little longer than usual. That means I have less time with Tim Steller. So, Tim, there are a couple of things that I had on my list for you. The surplus for education, well, surplus for the state. I personally wish that some of that $3 billion was going to be headed to education here in Arizona. But lawmakers right now, this session is so focused on pieces of legislation that would make it harder many educators believe make it harder for teachers to teach.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to get...
I mean, this thing about a lesson plan having to go up online within...
7 days, I
think. 7 days or something of what the teacher is going to be teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, on and on it goes.
You're right, and all the meddling in whether teachers need to inform...
What they call, the lawmakers say, full transparency if a student tells a teacher anything.
Like, I'm gay. And I need help, that kind of thing.
It has to be reported then to the parent.
Right.
But on and on it goes.
Yeah.
And the surplus, well, $3 billion, $1 billion of that may go toward this new water authority and desalinization, but I don't see any of it going to education.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's still to be written. There is a general hostility toward public education right now in the legislature that comes from a few different sources, one of which is just this long-standing conflict about funding. Goes back to the strike back in 2018.
The Red for Ed.
Red for Ed. You know, people, Republicans feel like they were never given credit for the help that they did give. Teachers say, well, that was because we forced you into a corner, you know, that's why you helped us. Anyway, you know, and so, and also this whole thing has arisen about critical race theory. The whole idea that the public schools are doing terrible things to our children has kind of taken over the GOP because there was a demonstration in Virginia when the Republican used that as his main platform and won surprisingly
the
easily.
The gubernatorial candidate.
Yeah, and so...
Who knew candidate who became governor.
Right, so that became a proven...
Vehicle
to... Right, and so... I mean, interestingly, I've read some polling data recently. I know this is true of me. People who have children in school, in public schools, the vast majority tend to be satisfied. But I don't think the majority of voters have children in public schools. And so, you know, these other people who have maybe misinformed or highly ideological opinions about schools really have a lot of sway.
Tim, bike lanes, we had... For the first time since he was elected, we had Kevin Dahl. He's a new council person on the show this week. And I asked him, do we need to go back to the drawing board about these bike lanes here in town? He says, absolutely. It's costly, but and that's part of this Proposition 411 that will be on the ballot in May, will be to enhance safety for bike lanes. But it really feels that the city that prides itself on being one of America's most bicycle-friendly accident continues to have not only these high-profile accidents, like what happened to Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry, the hit-and-run accident up on Sunrise. Within the last 10 days, and on it goes.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, so it's obviously not just within the city limits, but all around the Tucson metro area that this is an issue. And yeah, I mean, it's to the point where, I mean, a painted line on the road obviously does nothing to protect a cyclist. And so, you know, people are moving past that toward protected cycling lanes, you know, putting up planters, putting up other visual or physical barriers. And yeah, we have to go there if we want to keep cyclists safe, which we should want to, since that's a better way of getting around in many different ways.
Robert has called us. Robert, I'm so tight on time. If you could keep your remarks to a few seconds, please.
Yes, Bill. At one point, ever did giving school any more money ever help the grades? Ever?
Well, it's real simple. I mean, does a school have a need? And if it has a need that's not being met, then money can help meet that need. And I can speak from experience as a parent who's had two kids going through schools that, yeah, there are plenty of needs that that go unmet in our public schools. So, it you know, you can look at it as an outcome thing where if the grades don't go up, then we've wasted our money. But I would look at it another way and saying, are the school's needs being met? Are the children having a better education in school? And if they are, then that's money well spent.
All right. Did you walk Broadway, you said, today?
Yep. I went from Country Club to Euclid, just checking out the reconstruction. I got a column coming up, kind of departing from the piece we wrote last Sunday that was about how, once again, the project is delayed there. Looking more toward the future of what it's going to be.
Is it going to be nice?
I'm actually pretty excited.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have a lot of these kind of 1950s era, 60s era commercial roads in Tucson that have like all these driveways going in and out, no mm-hmm. sidewalks, mm-hmm. all that. I mean, in comparison, this is going to be closer to what Broadway, in my opinion, should be, which is, you know, not a downtown, but an adjacent yeah. to downtown retail and commercial street.
Well, you picked an unusually hot day to do that walk.
Yeah, I know.
A hot day for March.
That's why I did it in the morning.
That's why you're wearing your hat, too. All right, Tim Stiller, thanks. We'll look for your column in Sunday Star. Thank you for coming in, Tim.
Thank you.
We'll pause right here. Weekend Watch is coming up next.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Time to stir it up with Matt Russell, Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start planning that trip to Silver City. Good place to start, their website. Lots of great information about things to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Just hanging out in a great environment over in Silver City. The website is southwestnewmexico.org. I like that temperature over there in Silver City. Midday, mid-70s today. Going to be up pushing toward 80. Perfect weather for outdoor activities. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, the Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, I know you've got, is it too soon to get out the old Speedo?
I don't know.
Yes, you know, it might be a week or two too soon, but with temperatures in the mid-90s this weekend, I think I might have to get into the drawer a little bit early this season.
It will not be a pretty sight. No, enough said, enough said about that. What am I hearing about a place called The Pit?
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about food trucks here on Weekend Watch because, you know, personally, I think some of the best dishes in town are being served from the windows of motor vehicles, which is why I am so excited to announce today's grand opening of the Pit Food Truck Park, an entire park dedicated to food truck cuisine. Not one truck, not two trucks, a veritable convoy congregating in a dedicated two-acre space at 22nd and Pantano. So the big reveal is today from 3 to 7 p.m. There's going to be lots of picnic tables and umbrellas, a play area for the kids. Barrio Brewing will be serving up some suds along with live music and, of course, cuisine from the virtually countless lineup of food trucks. After today, the park will be open 11 to 8 daily. So as far as this afternoon is concerned, I say follow those trucks over to the Pit.
Well, this is a new concept, isn't it, about a central location for the trucks?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of events hire food trucks to come provide food for their guests, but here's a one-stop dedicated space representing a whole range of ethnicity when it comes to cuisine. I think it's a great and creative idea.
Matt, is Oro Valley doing their Spring Festival of the Arts this year?
You betcha. And you know what a coincidence. It's this weekend, tomorrow from 10 to 5, a Sunday from 10 to 4 at the Oro Valley Marketplace, showcasing, of course, some of the Southwest's finest artisans in fashion and food. The visual arts. There's also going to be a pop-up music performance calendar, a selection of food trucks. There I go again. You know, Bill, one of the things I love about events like this is you can shop with the artisans themselves and learn how they make their unique works of art. Perfect weather this weekend for some shopping al fresco. Head up to Oro Valley and check it out.
The Fire Truck Brewing Company has been very creative with their offerings, Matt.
Yeah, you know what? They obviously want to extend their Mardi Gras celebrations into spring. It's their fifth annual crawfish boil. It's tomorrow from 11 to 8 at their location on Grant and Swan. Live crawfish have been flown in fresh from New Orleans, and they're going to be boiled the authentic New Orleans way. Your $20 ticket gets you a full pound of crawfish, potatoes, corn, andouille sausage, and a side of dirty rice. Plenty of fire truck brews are going to be there as well for additional purchase. Now, the event is sold out every year, so I strongly suggest that you get your tickets now. There will be no tickets at the door. Just go to the Fire Truck Brewing Facebook page and look for a link to the crawfish boil.
Something tells me there'll be some Cajun music out there as well.
You can count on it.
All right. Inside Tucson Business column by Matt. What's in it?
Yeah, you know, with mask mandates expiring, many local bars and restaurants are kind of rediscovering what it means to be social again. And for one in particular on 4th Avenue, an entire section of their menu is devoted to the whole idea of socialization. You can read my social story in this week's Inside Tucson Business.
Should be a winner. Thank you very much, Matt Russell. Great weekend to you.
Yeah, cheers, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music that you hear at the beginning of our program, composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, who does a great job of making sure all of those podcasts are up at buckmastershow.com in a very timely manner each afternoon. Everybody here at KVOI, including longtime engineer producer Tom Fairbanks, everybody at Bustos Media Tucson, making Buckmaster feel so welcome. Have a great weekend, everybody.